The Corsican Brothers, from the novel by Alexandre Dumas. While Lucien de Franchi and his friend Griffo baked a pheasant over a campfire in the lovely valley below Mount Cyanthus, their enemies, the hated Gadici, were planning their death. Dino Gadici and his brother had heard in a roundabout way that de Franchi was going on a hunting trip and had discovered the exact spot where he would be camping. And so we find these two men treading their way carefully down the treacherous mountain path leading to the valley below them. A spiral of smoke coiled heavenwards, proof that the campers were already in the valley just as the sun was setting.
They've camped over near the river.
Yes, and in a clearing. That means we shall have to wait until it is dark. Pitch dark. Fortunately, there will be no moon tonight.
They tell me Lucien de Franchi sleeps cat-like with one eye open.
I think we shall be able to deal with him. We shall wait, my dear brother, until 2 or 3 in the morning. That is when a man sleeps the soundest, and then...
And then?
And then it'll be my pleasure to stab with this dagger. We shall creep up on the camp. You will attend to Griffo, and I, as head of the family, will strike into the Franchi himself.
This has been almost too good to be true. To think that after all these years of waiting...
And so soon after the ambush the other night. If anything had happened to Marianne, it would have been like a dagger in my own heart, Pietro.
I've never seen two people as close as you and your daughter.
Perhaps I am biased. But I don't think I've seen a lovelier girl in Corsica.
Everybody says that. My own daughters cannot hold a candle to her. They say so openly.
All the same, Marianne's not been herself of late. All today she hardly spoke.
I think she's suffering from shock. Don't forget that she came very near to losing her life when she met Lucien de Franchi.
Lucien de Franchi, who sits somewhere down on that valley near that spiral of smoke. He will pay for everything tonight. This dagger will surely find its mark and strike a final blow for the Gadici.
Emily.
Oh, it is you, Louis.
You're late.
There was trouble with our coach. One of the horses had to be changed. Oh, Louis, I'm so glad to see you. I was glad you secured an invitation to the ball.
Nothing could keep me away when I knew that you'd be here. Are your mother and father with you?
Yes. They are talking with the hostess at the moment. Louis, I must speak with you privately, and now...
Come here into this small salon. It's away from the crowd. Oh, Emily, you look so beautiful tonight. Why don't you always wear black? Black and silver.
I always wear silver, because Aunt Cecily tells me it suits me. And with silver, I wear all the other colors.
After you, lovely lady.
I haven't much time, darling Louis, but so much has to be done tonight. If you love me, if you really love me...
If I love you, merely I can't think without thinking about you. Your name's on my lips, your image in my eyes, every day since that wonderful night on the terrace at the Marquise's reception.
And I have been thinking about you, wondering what you were doing here in Paris, being unhappy in the country with Aunt Cecily. She's so prim, so proper. And as for letters... Well, it was only through the greatest of care that I was able to get your note before her eagle eyes fell upon it.
Was I too presumptuous?
I read it over and over again. And, darling Louis, if you really want to ask my hand in marriage...
I told you that night on the terrace.
Well, I think tonight is the night.
Tonight?
Yes. As you know, Papa and Mama are here. Aunt Cecily is impressed with you because you can provide comfortably for me. I am just wondering, though, your uncle and aunt... They will approve of me?
Oh, of course.
I have no dowry, not to speak of at any rate. But my father moves in high circles, as does my mother.
I wouldn't care if your father was a peasant in Corsica.
Corsica? I know the name.
Oh, it's some island full of savages in the Mediterranean. A friend of mine has just come back from a holiday there. Oh, let me look at you, Emily. You're lovely, lovely, lovely. That's all I can say. Your eyes, your hair, your figure, your smile, your voice.
Oh, Louis, you overwhelm me. But you won't forget tonight is the night. Papa is in a very good mood.
I won't forget, sweetheart.
Oh, listen. Already they are starting to dance. My parents will be looking for me. Till later, Louis.
Before you go, just one. One kiss.
Oh, Louis.
I'm in heaven, Amelie. A heaven which I never thought existed. You're the loveliest creature in this whole world. And my life is yours from this moment onwards.
And so the lovely Amelie Latouche, in her black velvet gown with the great silver sash and silver bows in her hair, hurried to her papa and her mama, while Louis stood entranced, staring after her, and then beyond into the lovely ballroom filled with richly dressed gentlemen and silk-clad ladies. Later, as he moved, dreamlike amongst this distinguished gathering, his mind and his thoughts were not with them. His eyes were forever following the lovely Amelie as she danced a measure first with this gentleman, then with that. Her fair hair gleaming under the myriad candles in their scintillating chandeliers, her soft laugh tinkling and reaching across the crowd to him. Finally, seeing his opportunity, he approached Amelie's father, and the two gentlemen retired to a small anteroom. Amelie's eyes flashed uneasily towards the closed door, but in a moment she had forgotten, for a minuet was being played, and she was asked to tread a measure by one of the best dancers in the room. And Amelie, with her light-heartedness and irresponsibility, loved dancing and soft lights and the feeling that all eyes were upon her. Meanwhile, as the night sped on, moonless, the sky black with the stars, cold, hard, and glittering over this gracious house. These same stars glittered more brightly over the great valley below Mount Cyanthus in Corsica. Two men crouched in a thicket not far from the red glow which was discernible through the trees. Two men who had been sitting thus for some hours. No word had been spoken, but now the elder, bearded man broke the silence.
You hold the watch, Pietro. What is the time?
I cannot see. It is too dark. But I'm sure it would be after 12.
As soon as this wind drops, we shall strike a light and see. 3 o'clock is the hour, Pietro.
Does it get on towards morning, then?
I have been told that man has his deepest sleep at 3. They call it the hour of the dead. Indeed, it shall be the hour of the dead, because this dagger shall stop all life.
I think they're asleep now. There's been no sign of movement over there in the camp for the last 2 hours.
We play safe. But before we creep up on them, remember this, Pietro. There must be no mistake. At dusk, you saw how the blankets were disposed. Lucien de Franchi sleeps inside the tent. The other man, Griffo, outside by the fire.
It means that you creep from the other side under the tent and attack Lucien. I deal with the other men.
That is correct. And we strike at the hour of the dead. 3 o'clock.
It's you, Louis.
What are you doing here in my apartment?
Oh, I've been waiting for you. What's the time?
It struck 3 o'clock. I've just come home.
Oh, yes, from the ball. I didn't think you'd be as late as this. Gaston showed me to your apartment and I went off to sleep. 3 o'clock? Good gracious, it's so late. What detained you?
What detained me? Oh, Pierre, I'm the happiest man in Paris, in the whole wide world. Tonight's been the most wonderful night of my life. In fact, from tonight, my life has started.
What do you mean?
I'm going to marry Mademoiselle Amelie Latouche.
Louis?
It's the truth. Tonight, when I met her at the reception, her father and mother were there. I was closeted with her father for over an hour. Everything's been arranged, and all that remains now is that I should talk with my uncle. But as you know, he'll offer no obstacles, no bar to my happiness.
I'm very happy to hear of your good fortune, Louis.
But why have you waited up so late, Pierre? Wouldn't tomorrow have done?
I've been very worried, Louis. I wanted to talk with you earlier this evening, but you were in no mood for serious talk.
I should say not, with the prospect of meeting Amelie after a separation between us. Yeah, you look very worried. The matter must be urgent when you wait till 3 in the morning. Wait till I come home.
It's so urgent, Louis, that I... Well, in a way, I'm sorry that you've committed yourself tonight.
What?
Oh, not that it would make any difference, I suppose, but what I have to tell you might have a great bearing on your future.
Pierre, don't look so solemn. Nothing can interfere with my happiness, nothing. Emile loves me, and I love Emile. They're going to be married, and that means I'm the luckiest man in the whole of France. You've seen her tonight, dancing the minuet, all eyes upon her. That lovely smile, her beautiful teeth.
Louis! Louis, what's the matter?
My heart! My heart!
Oh, Louis! Louis, let me help you to a chair. What's the matter, Louis? A heart attack?
No, but the pain. I can't bear it.
Louis.
It's like a knife. A knife piercing my heart. The pain. The pain.
Before Pierre's amazed eyes, Louis's outstretched hands grasped the long brocade curtain which hung by his bedside. His knuckles whitened as his hands tightened in convulsive pain, and then down came the curtain with Louis to the floor in violent force. Then Pierre, still dumbfounded, saw Louis enveloped in the curtain roll over and over in the direst agony. At 3 o'clock, the Gadici had planned to murder Louis's twin brother in Corsica. What is happening in the dark valley below Mount Cyanthus? Make sure you hear the next enthralling episode of The Corsican Brothers.